If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcast family, a growing community of music and cultural podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and of course, music. For more, visit osirispod.com. Before we get to today's show, have you seen the amazing containers that cannabis and hemp products come in these days? I'm talking about those amazing joint tubes you carry around in your pocket or the cool containers edible products come in now. There's a revolution in packaging happening around the cannabis industry. In fact, it's already happened. Our new sponsor, Kush Co., is largely responsible for incredible innovations that are so useful, well, we take them for granted. But these packages have to comply with strict guidelines, be childproof, and all other sorts of regulations. Kush is on top of that. I guess they are really good at what they do because they've sold over a billion units of stuff to more than 5,000 legally operated medical and adult use dispensaries, growers, and producers across North America, South America, and Europe. Check out their site at kushco.com/podcast for more information. The show starts now.
We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the very jammy and hilarious Dude Wears Socks from SoCal jam band The Higgs. Truthfully, until they reached out, I had no idea about them or their sound. Since then, we've listened to whatever music we can find and have been impressed with what we've heard. Their jams have purpose, and their more slightly less goofy songs are very well written. We recently caught up with The Higgs frontman John Lavero, and our conversation started when I asked him to take us back to how it all began.
So as The Higgs, we've been together since around late 2011, but since then there's been some big changes as far as members go to the band, and we've kind of landed on this lineup of a four-piece with Garrett Morris on drums, David Barsky on bass, Jesse Jennings on keys, and myself, John Lavero, on guitar. And that's kind of been the thing for the past two and a half years, and this is the lineup that we're trying to pursue now and trying to go for. And the sound has really changed a lot since back in 2011.
How would you say the sound has changed from then till now?
Well, when we started, we had three guitars to start.
Wow.
So now we have only one guitar, which that makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But also, we were more influenced by songwriting and harmonies and that sort of thing, but always having the kind of improvisational jam band thing in mind. Mm-hmm. But then as the lineup changed, we kind of went more for the improvisation and the abstract jamming, and but also keeping true to really good songwriting and harmonies and things like that. But definitely the focus has gone more towards the more psychedelia and the more improvisational factors of the music.
Yeah, and that certainly comes through in some of the stuff that I've been listening to. But the influences are quite wide and varied, even though you are, I would say, a progressive jam band. There are a lot of hints, and some of them probably date back to, you know, those days when you had three guitars, because there is, you know, a pretty predominant Southern rock feel to the music in some places, and I think that's, you know, expressed in some of your playing specifically. But there's other things too. There's a lot of Little Feet. I think there's some Fish, obviously, and I even think that there's some Grateful Dead. Is there one particular band that you look to more than the others when it comes to figuring out how you're going to bring your songs to life?
We draw inspiration from a lot of different bands. It's hard to pin down just one band. Mm-hmm. It seems like for each kind of thing we're trying to work on, there seems to be a band that's specific that we can look at to get clues from. Like for a lot of our improvising and things like that, we look at bands like Fish and The Dead, who to me are just like the masters of improvising. Mm-hmm. And for songwriting and things like that, we look at other inspirations. I mean, we look at bands like Drive-By Truckers. Ryan Adams is a huge inspiration to me. But then also things like Herbie Hancock and some more of the jazz fusion type music. So really, it's hard to pin down just one band. But right. It seems like whatever we're trying to achieve, we look to a certain project or a certain band to kind of give us clues at how to achieve that.
And is that something that you think about while you're writing the songs, or when you bring the songs to the guys in the band and you say, okay, how are we going to create a melody and instrumentation around these songs? How does that song writing process come together?
I think both ways. So sometimes it can just be something where, say, I'm just sitting at home and I'm writing something. Maybe I've been listening to a particular artist nonstop. Like, for example, I wrote a song recently called Icy Walls of Fate. I was just listening to Neil Casal for about 2 days straight. Mm-hmm. And this song just kind of came out of that. I brought it to the band. And of course, it evolved into something even more than that, because once you take it to the band, it progresses and people add their own influences and ideas. But then there's also times where we just kind of say, hey, we want to create something that sounds kind of like this. And right. We kind of just bounce ideas off of each other and see where it goes from there.
In terms of, you know, topicality, is it just, you know, whatever strikes your fancy? I mean, you have songs And I appreciate the song Dude Wears Socks because occasionally I do wear socks with my Birkenstocks. And certainly when I was younger, I did a lot more. Now I'm a grown up and my kids make fun of me if I do that. So you don't want to be an uncool dad. But things like, you know, Dude Wears Socks or Kung Fu You. I mean, these are pretty crazy ideas and songs. What inspires you to write these numbers?
Those two specifically are kind of more just goofy, tongue-in-cheek kind of things. Mm-hmm. Definitely more like jam vehicles, but they have some subtle meaning behind them. And you pretty much just nailed it on the head with Dude Wears Socks. I mean, we all know a guy, or we are that guy or girl, who sometimes wears socks with their Birkenstocks.
Right.
And really, that's the extent of the meaning of that song. There's really not much more I can say about it other than it's a great jam vehicle and it allows us to go places with the improvisation.
And I would assume that Kung Fu You too is also like that. I mean, one of the things that, you know, jam bands do sometimes is that there are lyrics to songs just because, like you say, you need a vehicle to jam and the vocal or the words become another sort of instrument in the sonic milieu. So is that the case with a lot of your stuff? Rain and Thunder isn't like that, and Road Less Traveled aren't like that, but there are these little pieces that are like that, right?
No, I'd say there's only a few that are like that, mm-hmm. and you just pick the two that we probably play the most frequently. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, we do write a lot of songs that I would say are deeper in meaning when it comes to the lyrics. Mm-hmm. Songs about, you know, struggle, love and loss and life and positive things and, you know, getting through some of the hard times and getting to the other side and things like that. So it's not all just like tongue-in-cheek jam vehicles. Sometimes, I mean, even those deeper songs also are good jam vehicles as well. So, mm-hmm. It all depends, you know, it all depends on how we're feeling and who brings the song to the table. So,
right.
Yeah.
And is it a case, you know, you, and I've been perusing, some of your music. Is it a case that you're releasing more live stuff as opposed to going into the studio? I mean, Change is a studio record. Is it a case of you guys just wanting to play and put live music out for people as opposed to concentrating necessarily on studio records?
I think the fan base in the jam scene in particular just likes live releases. Mm-hmm. So right now we are definitely focusing on recording as many of our shows as possible, getting multi-track high-quality recordings,
right.
and then coming together and putting together compilations. Like the last release we released was Road Less Traveled Volume 1, Live mm-hmm. at Crazy Horse Saloon. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to continue to do is release these Road Less Traveled volumes and do like live shows or live compilations. But at the same time, we definitely appreciate and understand the value of an album. An album is very, very important. And even though people aren't necessarily listening to albums like they were back, 20, 30 years ago,
right.
and they're not buying them like they were, I still think having a story, a full from a beginning to end picture that you can put together with an album is very important, and we're going to continue to release full-length albums in the future.
Our conversation will continue in just a bit. Off the top of the show, though, I told you about Cushco Holdings. They are, by the way, a publicly traded company under the ticker KSHB and the parent to innovative cannabis industry leaders such as Kush Supply Company, Kush Energy, The Hybrid Creative, and Coletto Packaging Solutions. They are doing amazing things aside from sponsoring our show. You should check out their website at kushco.com/podcast for more information. Now, back to the show. Talk to me a bit about being a band, a jam band, in Southern California, because we don't often think of Southern California as the place where jam bands come from. We think about the Northeast. We think about Northern California. There's a band from Northern California, a jam band that many people know. But we don't often think of Southern California. And I had a conversation just a couple weeks ago with the Alpine Camp, and they
turned me on to this notion that there are pockets of jam bands in SoCal, and you guys are, because of the influence of jam band across North America, you guys have sort of carved out a little space for yourselves in SoCal, right?
Absolutely. And it's changed a lot. So when I first started listening to bands like Fish and the Dead, it was a long time ago. It was when I was about 14 years old. I was lucky enough to have some friends who had some older siblings who would listen to this type of music. And that was even rare. Growing up in my area, bouncing around, talking to people in high school and junior high school and all that stuff. And I know that that's much different in Northern California and on the East Coast, where like these bands are widely talked about and well known. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of, I always kind of felt like an outcast knowing about this music, seeing bands like Fish. But then when I would go see them, for my first time seeing Fish, it was at the Forum in 2003, and there were thousands and thousands of people there. So there always has been a scene for it, but especially recently. And I don't know if it's from the Dead 50 or Fish coming back, you know, within the past decade, and I don't know, John Mayer being in Dead and Company. I don't know what, everything is coming together, but more and more people seem to be getting into the scene, and it's definitely growing in Southern California in a huge way. And not only are the Higgs gaining popularity and success down here, but there are more and more Grateful Dead cover bands popping up left and right. Like every weekend, it seems like there's a new Grateful Dead cover band popping up, right, or a Fish tribute or something like that. So there always has been a scene in Southern California. I feel like it's always been a little bit more hidden, but right now I feel like the freaks are starting to wave their flags a bit more.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Grateful Shred is another friend of the show, and they're of course from Southern California, and I know I always pronounce their name wrong, but Cubensis.
Cubensis. Great friends of mine.
Yeah, they're another, you know, Grateful Dead tribute band from SoCal. So it makes a lot of sense that you guys are in SoCal and having fun. But you know, this tour, the tour that you have coming up, sort of takes you outside of California to Nevada and Colorado and New Mexico. How has the response been when you get outside of your home turf for your music?
You know, everywhere is different, and everywhere has different markets and different styles that people are into. But for the most part, we get a really good response, and we end up having more and more people coming out when we come back the next year. Mm-hmm. Places like Idaho, New Mexico, Arizona, surprisingly to me, have like amazing jam scenes and people who are coming out in droves to see the shows. We just did a show at Last Exit Live in Arizona and had a bunch of people come out. It was just a fantastic night. But yeah, we're going to be going through New Mexico and Colorado and Arizona and all those places, and just looking forward to seeing more and more people come back to the shows.
Is this a full-time thing for you guys? Is it a full-time thing for you? How does it all work in terms of spending time on the craft and the music and tour, or is it, you know, you can't yet quit day jobs, that this is sort of a sideline thing for you, many of you?
Well, we all kind of have a side gig. I teach on the side, and that, luckily for me, I'm able to kind of hone in my craft while I'm working at the same time. Mm-hmm. while I teach. But we also kind of, you know, try to supplement on the side, but we're getting to that point where we're starting to get more ticket sales and more people out to our shows. So reaching that point where we can just do this full time is not far.
That's got to be very inspiring for you.
Absolutely. We've been working really hard for it, so it is.
How important is social media for you guys? I didn't know about you. I know that our friends from No Simple Road have had you on, but prior to you being on No Simple Road, you guys, and specifically you, John, have been hounding and stalking and sharing and liking our stuff on social media. But I'm curious about your fans and how active they are in sharing your jam, for lack of a better word, on social media and letting everybody know about the music that you guys make.
Oh, it's unbelievable, actually. We have such a great support group, especially through social media. There's a fan page that is run by one of our super fans, Stephen Thornton, and he's the admin on there. So we have a lot of action in there. There's people like I'll shout out Joe LaGrippo, who's one of the he's like the best taper in Southern California. He comes to all of our shows, makes sure he gets a high quality recording of it and throws it up on archive. And because of that, we have, I think, over like 80 recordings on archive. So people like that, they're constantly on the social media, resharing our, reposting our posts and sharing our stuff. And it's just helped us so much. It's actually unbelievable.
What's next for you guys? So you're still, you know, I'd like to think of you guys as one of these, for lack of a better word, baby bands, because, you know, this isn't full-time and you are playing smaller rooms, which is cool. What do you think you need to do to take the next step in terms of playing larger rooms, maybe getting on a headline, not a headlining tour, but a support tour with a band? How do you guys go about doing that stuff? Because I think that's probably salient at this point.
Absolutely. We're slowly just trying to open up for more and more of the bigger bands in the scene. Like in the past year, we've opened up for bands like Spafford, Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, O'Teal Burbridge, Melvin Seals, Pink Talking Fish, Kung Fu, and many more. We did like a late night with CRB and just very recently. So it's things like that. It's playing in front of the right audiences. And most of the time when we play before these bands, most of the people have never heard about our band before. They have no idea who we are.
Right.
And we're leaving them with a good impression and having them walk out of the room and go, oh, who are the Higgs? That was pretty cool, or whatever they're saying. Right. So that's basically the goal, is to just keep getting in front of those types of audiences and getting those opening spots for those bigger bands.
And how have the bigger bands taken to you guys? I mean, are there stories of people joining you on stage or talking to you after your set before they go on? I'm curious about people like Neil Casal, who, you know, you guys cover Ryan Adams, and certainly he was a part of the Ryan Adams sound for a long time. What have some of the quote-unquote grown-ups said to you about your sound and the music that you're making?
Oh, that's funny you ask about Neil, because when we played that late night, it was in Tahoe, and they played in basically the room right next to us. So we played right after them, and we saw Adam and Neil walk into the rooms, and we actually cover a Circles Around the song, a Circles Around the Sun song as well.
Cool.
Called Saturday's Children. And we saw them, so we're like, hey, let's go into this. And we went into it, and they started grooving and smiling and dancing, and Neil pulled out his phone and started filming us and filming the crowd and stuff. And that was a cool moment. And I actually got to talk to Adam after that, and he was just telling me how honored he was to have been covered and how cool that was, and how he had a smile from ear to ear. And that was just really cool. So that was one instance where we had some feedback from some of the grown-ups. But also, like, I've had we played right before Moon Alice once, and Barry Sless and Pete Sears both came up to me and told me how much they liked the music. Pete Sears was like, this is reminding me of the 70s, you guys rip so much, and this and that. And so it's the little things like that that kind of make you think, okay, yeah, what we're doing is right, you know. And we've had Melvin Seals has sat in with us back a few months back, and also Red from Spafford has sat in with us. So we've had some like really amazing musical moments.
Well, thanks for taking the time today, and thanks for letting our listeners know about the Higgs. For more information, people should definitely check out the Higgs thehiggsmusic.com.
That's it.
And get some tour information. There are some dates, and I'm sure the schedule will pick up towards the spring and summer, not just in SoCal. So people will want to be checking that out, or they can follow you on Facebook and Instagram. And you know what? Head over to archive.org. I think I'm going to do that actually, and grab some more music. So thanks for taking the time, dude. Thanks for letting us know about you, and we'll catch you real soon, all right?
Right on. I appreciate it.
This isn't the last you'll be hearing from John Lavero and the Higgs on our show. I suspect good things are in store for these dudes, and we'll be following the story and sharing it with you. You can learn more about the Higgs by visiting thehiggsmusic.com or by following them on social media, where they are quite active. Before we leave you, have a listen to the studio version of Freddie, taken from the Higgs 2017 release, Change.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.